just be the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, the Premier League podcast hosted by Americans. Today, we've got Peter in the house in D.C., representing for Chris and Jacob, who are taking a nice little sabbatical during its national break. And we got Miles in New York. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, doing well. We know some of us are living internationally right now. Chris, I don't know if he's ever coming back, Shay. I'm a little worried about our friend. It looks like this guy's living it up across the pond.
He is. I mean, Chris always has a nice IG feed. For all those who don't follow him, you should follow him. But he's posting a lot. This man is really enjoying his vacation. I've seen all kinds of views in Morocco. I don't know what's going on down there, but I've blocked it out because I don't want to be jealous. Because it's winter season over here while he's living up.
Oh yeah, it's good. Winter is coming, Shay. You might not feel it there, and Peter, you also might not feel it, but winter is coming.
Oh man, DC, we get it, but we don't get it terribly. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be here or there. I wish I'm trying to do one more trip like Chris right before the baby comes. So I might go see some sun before we can. So trying to find a nice spot to get away, not think about United. It'll be great.
Well, I don't think you can avoid that. That news will haunt you wherever you go. Peter, how are you doing from your sports injury? So for the viewers, listeners, Peter had a sports injury a couple weeks ago, and it was bad. I can only laugh because you're better now, Peter, but it was bad. It was bad, man. I'm
bro,
sorry.
Oh, my bad. God. So for listeners, I was playing in a game. It was like rainy, cold Saturday, and I got elbowed in the face going up for a header. I might add, Drew, I'm like 5'6" on a good day in the sky. So I had no reason to do that. And I got hit in the face. I came home and I knew my lip was a bit swollen, but I kept on playing in the game and I took a nap. And when I woke up, my wife was like, "Yo, what happened to your lip?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's probably a little swollen." But I noticed my mouth, I was speaking weird, and I went into the bathroom and I was like, "Oh my God." So I FaceTimed my cousin who's a doctor, and he was like,
"Yeah, was he like going to New York right now?"
Yeah, because he was worried that they had to slice my lip open, but they didn't, they didn't have to do that. But luckily, it went down. So, yo, man, concussion, and I got a concussion from it, unfortunately. Jeez. So stay safe out there, y'all. Stay safe.
That's two across the pond members who've gotten concussions within the last year and a half, 2 years from soccer related injuries.
Hey, man, you know these Ann Arbor boys, man. We wild out here.
Anyway, so guys, you know, we were going to cover some interesting games, but we've had a lot of exciting news happen within the last couple of days, a lot of sackings. And we knew this was going to happen, but I just didn't think it was going to happen this early. I thought more so towards, you know, the winter break. But just to give everyone an overview on where we stand in the Premier League, we know last time we talked about Conte coming in. But since then, we've had a sacking from Aston Villa with Dean Smith. We've had a sacking and a hiring in Newcastle. We've had Norwich lose their manager, Daniel Farke. So guys, how do you feel about, what is the most exciting sacking? And do you feel like any one of these is mistimed or misplaced?
I don't know if any of them are exciting because, man, I feel bad for all of them. You know, like, Daniel Farke, he was managed Norwich and they won. And then, you know, he's probably celebrating with the team. And then he goes back into the locker room and the chairman is like, "Pack your bags." But for me, the one that was most surprising was Dean Smith at Aston Villa. I thought they were, you know, they had a good thing coming. I know, you know, losing Jack Grealish is a huge loss. And I didn't realize they lost 5 games in a row. And, you know, they have aspirations to move up the table. So the owners, they have ambitious owners and they wanted to make a change. So, but was surprised because of the work he's done in the last 2 years. It's been great.
Yeah, Peter, I agree with you there. I mean, in their last, they have the worst record of any team in the Premier League right now in their last 5. You know, Gary Lineker even went in hard on the decision and said that it was another knee-jerk, panicky, rubbish decision. So we know, you know, some of the top pundits here don't agree with it. I think that was a little hard.
Guess who's the front runner for the job?
Lampard?
Gerard,
really?
DBG. Yeah.
Really?
That actually might be like a decent job for him.
Hey, we saw Xavi go back to Barcelona. You know, why can't Gerard do it too? That's interesting. I think the Eddie Howe was the most interesting. And we've seen so many sackings, guys. This is how many sackings we've seen so far in season 5? Because we had Nuno get sacked as well.
Cisco at Watford.
So that's 5 sackings overall that I can count off. This early into the season, right? But I think the Eddie Howe one's interesting, not because Newcastle don't need a new manager, because they've been miserable. But Eddie Howe's a name we talked about 3-4 seasons ago. He may have gone to Arsenal instead of Arteta, right? Like, he had a promising career. He was a young manager, someone you can kind of build around. We know Newcastle has this injection of money coming, hopefully, you know, if they can figure out the sponsorship deals. Do you think he is actually a long-term investment? A good long-term investment for Newcastle, a team that probably wants to start pumping money and win now?
I think it's an interesting signing. And obviously, you know, there are tons of articles now about Eddie Howe. I mean, our listeners, and you all must know now, I read The Athletic, because there's a really excellent profile of Eddie Howe in The Athletic. Just talking about his dedication while he was at Bournemouth, how he works one-on-one with players. He arrives early. He stays late. He is like, wants to see everything and get involved in all aspects of the training. So this is a guy that is constantly looking to get the best out of his squad, mix things up, instills a very strong mentality and a very, I think, interesting and aggressive and progressive style of play. So I think, you know, looking at Newcastle where they are, he has experience battling out for relegation. He came in with, you know, Bournemouth when they had like nothing, no budget, you know what I mean? Not much success. And we saw that Bournemouth team kind of stagnate, but also some amazing players come out of that team.
Yeah, I think it's the best manager they could have got out of all the options outside of Emery. My only concern is this Newcastle team is not good. And he is coming immediately into a team that he has to get results over the next 6 weeks, because even if they have this huge influx of cash, it's going to be harder to convince players to come to this club in the middle of a relegation fight for him. So, yeah, the pressure's on for him. And if we remember, his Bournemouth teams were very good attacking, but they conceded a lot of goals. So, and again, he's coming into a relegation mess, and he needs to just start fast. And if he doesn't, the pressure will be immediately on him. But hoping for the best for him. So we'll see.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's an interesting one. Maybe I have short term memory, but I just remember this many managers being sacked this early in the season. We're on week 11, guys, and we've seen 5 sackings. A manager getting sacked every other week—that's crazy.
It's pretty crazy, because like, I feel like, you know, last season with COVID, like, no one was making any moves. Even if you sacked a manager, it's like bringing someone in, they have to like quarantine for 2 weeks maybe before they could see the squad. So it's like, you know, those managers were sitting pretty. And this season, I feel like clubs are like, all right, we got to make moves. You know, variants are coming. We don't know if we got to sack this guy while we can. Like, but, you know, it's in a competitive league, and you need results.
Okay, guys, I got a series of questions. Feel free to just answer them, but a couple about this manager. So out of all the managers we've seen come in, the 5 of them, right? Or I guess not 5, because they're not all filled yet. But out of the managers we've seen coming out of these 5 seconds, who do you think will exceed expectation? So not saying necessarily Conte. Conte will probably have the best record for sure, but who would exceed the expectation set forth for them?
That's hard to answer, because we don't know who any of the replacements are, you know, for Norwich, and maybe Frank Lampard, as I said, for Villa, maybe Gerard. The only one we really know is Conte and Howe. And between them, you got to say Conte, you know, just because he's such a superior manager, even with a squad that's a little bit in disarray.
Yeah, well, Ranieri, right? We know Ranieri.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Ranieri.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a good – it's Watford is easy to forget about, but it's a good point. I think for me, I think it has to be the Aston Villa job because this team is actually not that bad. I mean, granted, they finished like 12th and they lost Jack Villas, but they still have a lot of good talent. It's just been a bad run of form. And that team, I can see potential swinging their way post-Christmas. But Miles, what about you?
Definitely. No, that's a good point, Jay. And honestly, it would be interesting – seeing Gerrard. I mean, I would love to see Gerrard at a team that's not Liverpool. He's done so well at Rangers, and obviously, you know, players really like him. He also has a very progressive style of play. We know he's one of the greatest players to play the game. So, you know, and like you say, Shay, that team is good, and I think it could be very interesting to see him in the league, even with Lampard at that team. Whoever manages Norwich, I mean, if Lampard is taking over at Norwich, I don't know what his like long-term career goals are because like, you know, it's like, where do you go? You were managing at the top with Chelsea and now you're going literally to the bottom of the league. Like, you know, are you using this as a stepping stone or is this like,
it's not a lateral move. Or upward move. It's a downward move. But hey, everyone just needs to go reset. Maybe Ole should take one from his book. But my next question. Okay. Who is the next manager up on the sacking list? If you had to put your money down on this manager would be out next, who would that be?
Ole, even if it doesn't happen, it has to be him. You know, Rio Ferdinand, there's a tweet on, he had a podcast and he literally said, his own teammate said, like it's time, man. I just don't see you taking this team any further. He's the first ex-United player to actually, you know, give some criticism to him. But will it happen? I'm not sure. You know, as we were talking about before the podcast, Ed Woodward is resigning at the end of the year, and there's a lot of talk that he doesn't want the last thing to do to. The last kind of thing on his resume to be sacking another manager. So who knows? There's not that many managers out available now, and they may give it to him until the end of the year, but like, surely there's nothing more I could see him doing. You know, United will win a couple games, then they'll lose a couple games and maybe get top four with Ole, and that's it. So you just got to cut your losses right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, looking at the other squads, it's like Leeds, I mean, they're never going to fire Bielsa. Brentford's not going to like sack their coach, neither Southampton. Even if Rodgers does poorly with Leicester, he's built too much clout there. I think it's going to be Ranieri. It's just going to make a wild statement.
Two seconds.
Watford have done
next,
it before,
and the next, you know, and the next manager, 2 miles. Not like, okay, he may go, but you're saying he's the next one up. He's bottom. Yeah. You imagine be like, hey, look, sorry, you got to pack your bags and go.
Yeah, look, they've done it before, and I don't think he's going to really turn it around. So, yeah.
Be like, do you guys ever see that video of that? Do you ever watch So Hard Knocks on HBO? Anyways, it's like there's an episode with the Jets and one of the players was cut and he didn't realize he was cut. And he's like walking into the office and his key card doesn't work. And I imagine that happens so much at Watford. Like managers just come in and it's just like, oh, God, guess I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Watford. The staff is just probably like, oh, here goes another one. Yeah. But for me, I think, you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, the issue is the clout here. They're not going to fire Rodgers or Leicester, even though they are a top four team in terms of expectations, maybe top six, but doing really bad this year. Benitez, you know, I don't want to talk about Everton, but you're not going to sack him. You're not going to sack Bielsa. Brentford exceeds expectations early. So really, it comes up to a situation where like someone's tremendously underperforming and they haven't built the legacy. And you know, I hate to say it's Ole because I don't think they'll let him go. That's the real reason why I haven't picked him, Peter. I don't think he'll actually go.
I know. I don't think he'll either, but surely it's just at this point that there's nothing else that he can do, you know. The only instance is that they genuinely just don't have a plan and they don't know who would be a viable manager because they turned down Conte. So that could be it.
Yeah. I think we can talk a little bit about the Man City game. Shay. I mean,
I got one more. Actually, let's see one more question. Then we'll go to break and come to that next. But last question: who, now we're talking about sacking managers, who has saved their job? Who has exceeded expectations? And you're like, oh my God, I did not expect this, but he is performing lights out.
Easy, Vieira at Crystal Palace.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. I thought he was not going to last. I think that not just because of like his own experience, and I have family members that saw him play for New York City NYCFC and were unimpressed by him, but you know, that's not a great team. But we knew Crystal Palace wasn't really going to be that great, and I think he has done an incredible job with that squad and has them playing completely different from Hodgson era, you know, like two blocks of four. We saw that very organized, like 4-4-2 setup. And so, yeah, he is doing an amazing job there. I did not think he would still be there.
Yeah, I second that. Vieira, man, he's killing it. He's doing really well. And, you know, he's getting the best out of a lot of really good young players that, you know, sometimes it takes time to integrate them, and they've kind of quickly gotten into this team, like Connor Gallagher and Osen Edouard, and done well. And he's even gotten Benteke scoring goals again. Like, man, wish him more success.
You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm struggling between Arteta and David Morris. I think Arteta, it's like we kind of expected it, but then they didn't have it, but now they're doing good. But it's Arsenal, so who knows? But they've been looking really sharp. And so we definitely shouldn't overlook the journey that he's been on, because unlike Ole, he has surprised people in a positive way. But I think David Morris, and I think this is a good segue into our break / coming back into the Liverpool discussion. What is this man done? Like, he is like, what is going on? Being Liverpool, being a top four team in the Premier League, and last season they played pretty well too. Is West Ham legit? I don't know, guys, but we'll talk about it more after this break. Stay tuned. Okay, should we start with West Ham Liverpool? Okay. All right, welcome back, guys. Hope that transition was smooth. You know, Chris usually does the mixing, but you know, I'm here now, and it's a little rough and rugged, but it's okay. So, guys, West Ham Liverpool thoughts. I didn't think it was gonna be that good a game, and I remember tuning in and being like, just you know, while I'm eating this lunch, I'll watch the game, and then next thing I know, boom, West Ham is putting Liverpool on the back. You know, on their back, like it's crazy. Miles, as a Liverpool, as a resident Liverpool fans podcast, what do you think about that game? Were you surprised?
You know, honestly, I feel like there are a couple teams that just season in, season out, give Liverpool a tough game. And West Ham is one of them. But I did not expect it to be like that. I think, you know, Liverpool got exposed in that game, and it's really interesting to look at, you know, what Moyes did. Apparently Moyes, you know, is famous, did not know this, that maybe I wasn't giving him as much credit, but famous for really studying the opponent and, you know, analyzing their tactics. And he set up his team very well to, you know, kind of nullify the way a Liverpool attack with Trent and Salah, and, you know, was able to exploit that weakness and get their goals. And, you know, he's got that squad performing well. Declan Rice in the midfield is, I mean, probably one of the best defensive mids in the league. I also like, hey, I have the same fear sometimes, you know, that you all have about Man United, which is sometimes I just feel like Liverpool run out of ideas offensively. And when they're facing a team that sits back, there's no real plan B, I feel like, to break a team down. So, you know, full credit to Moyes setting up his team well. Liverpool, there are some players had poor games. Robertson had a poor game. You know, some questions over fouls and Allison, but, you know, full credit to Moyes for this game. I don't know, Peter, what did you think about it?
Yeah, it's funny. I was out to brunch and I just kind of was seeing the score on my phone on FootMob, and I saw it was 3-2 in the 90th minute. So I went to the bathroom and was like, let me just put this on watch it there, because I couldn't watch it anywhere else. And so I waited, you know, there's a lot of injury time. And when I got out the bathroom, there was this long ass line and I was like, damn, I shouldn't have done. But the to the game, it was really interesting. You know, credit to David Moyes, this West Ham team, you know, they beat Liverpool. They beat City. They beat us in the EFL Cup. They beat Tottenham. They are flying in Europa League. They are a very strong team. And Moyes, I used to give him a lot of things for the time at United, but he was always in a position to fail at that job. And it's taken him a couple of years to get back. And, you know, look at him. He's still a great manager and they're a great squad. My only thing with Liverpool is one thing I've noticed is that as good as they've been, as amazing as they've been this season, they've been pretty open defensively. And, you know, they've conceded a lot more chances that when you really look at it, a lot of 3-2s, 3-2 against Atleti and AC Milan, and obviously tying Brentford 3-3. Even when United lost, when they lost 5-0, United had some chances that a better team would have finished. So, you know, hopefully Klopp uses his international break to change that. He did this really interesting interview with a BBC reporter. And every time Klopp loses, he gets a little touchy, if you ever notice. And it's
he
so does. Funny.
He gets a little emotional, like in like not in like in a sad kind of way. He gets like a little bitey, you know, like feisty.
He said, "I'm not your puppy," when the guy was just asking him about that VAR, like, you know, were there any calls that were maybe questionable in the game, you know? Miles, what do you think?
Yeah, he's not great when he's under pressure in the interview. Yeah.
Remember when Rebecca told us
those questions?
Oh yeah.
Remember when Becca Lowe was like, he's unraveling a little bit?
You're right. Nothing to get worried about. We got international break. You know, you can point to the injuries in the midfield, Klopp having to rotate there. You know, maybe, you know, Robertson, I thought, played, you know, particularly poor. The stats against him are terrible. He had like tons of crosses and only like two or one of them was accurate. So, you know, maybe it's time to like start rotating Tsimikas in. I don't think it's really, you know, like panic mode. Like, look, Liverpool, they're not far off the top. They like waltz through Champions League group stage in what was arguably on paper the hardest group there. So, you know, it's not real panic time. You know.
Yeah. And I hope I didn't give it the message of panic time, because I mean, there's, like you said, only one loss, but the table is tight. I mean, it's like sandwich packed tight. So, you know, you can't really afford to have any kind of losses.
It's true. Well, I mean, West Ham sitting in third. I don't think any of us thought we would see that, but you know, four wins in a row. I mean, and Antonio's has not even been scoring recently, which is wild. Like, these goals are coming from other places. That team is playing very well. It's like one of the most informed teams. And in fact, the most informed team in the league right now. So, hey. Yeah. But Peter, you raised a good point. I mean, Liverpool are tossing away leads, which is not good. I mean, last week, you know, they had 2-0 up against Brighton, threw it away. So they do need to tighten up the back.
Do you guys think West Ham can sustain a top four run? Or do you think doing this and being in Europa may hinder them later on?
I mean, form is dangerous. That's the bottom line. Like, form is dangerous. Like, if you're in a good run of form, you can continue it until you don't. And then once you do, you can see teams spiral. And I haven't seen anything from West Ham to show that they won't continue it. But we just are expecting them not to continue it because they're not traditional contenders, right? And I refuse to believe David Moyes is going to win the Premier League. But, you know, crazy things have happened. Okay, so if we transition from this and then we talk about the other big derby. There's a lot of good games this weekend, but the other big derby of the weekend, Man City versus Manchester United. And let me just give my two thoughts here. United was never in that game. And it is so sad. Like, even though the score was, what was it, 2-0, it could have been significantly worse.
Yeah, but Shay, these players are wildly inconsistent players in this team. There's players that Ole just kind of plays and you know, instead of other people on the bench, but it's down to the manager, you know, the putting them out in a back five against this Man City team. Pep easily just saw what United were doing and put Phil Foden on the left as a left-sided left midfielder and Gabriel Jesus on the right, which allowed Kyle Walker and João Cancelo to also bomb forward. And it just completely killed this team. Ole is just, he's out of his depth. And even before this season, I had a feeling that this would be his last season at United, even when we were excited about Jadon Sancho.
But we've been saying this for the last couple of years though.
Really. Yeah. We have been, but the thing is like, he's always gotten out of it and exceeded our expectations. That's why, you know, we used to get in arguments about sacking Ole a year ago, 2 years ago, and maybe they were right because they missed out on a lot of really good managers in that period. But for United and the way that they've wired us as fans, getting third place and finishing second place and super far off was good enough. And there was progress going, but it's just this year it's stagnated, and it stagnated after getting one of the best center backs in Europe. I know he's injured, but still.
You're more positive.
Yeah. I mean, Peter, the stats, that game was just domination. I mean, like dominated. I'm surprised it was only 2-0. I mean, City, like in that first half, I don't know why. I mean, I do know why Ole went five at the back, but I think that was just a poor, who am I to say, right? But I, you know, co-host of Across the Pond, but for what it's worth, you know, poor decision. Man City like outpassed Man United in the game by like two, like Man United had 400 passes, Man City 832, like double the amount of passes. That first half, like, I don't think United touched the ball like for more than
two minutes
at a time. Like, but I will credit Ole, like, as in the second half, as soon as he switched to like a formation that his players are more comfortable with, they looked like they were on the ball more, pressing a little bit more in terms of like offensive threat, but like the damage had already been done. I mean, you could see it on the faces, like Ronaldo, this guy looked defeated and pissed every time. I mean, City did a good job. Every time he got the ball, they crunched him. I mean,
and that's the point.
They were
kicking long balls to Cristiano, knowing like what is he going to do against Ruben Dias and John Stones. Like, again, my whole thing, my thing is like, it's the what you're saying is super indicative of the club, but again, it's on the manager. Like, everyone saw it 20 minutes into the game and he didn't make any even tactical decisions. It's not about a formational change. And yeah, there are players that are not good in this squad, but all I'm saying is that like a better manager figures out how to utilize these players. Donny Van de Beek was literally on the Ballon d'Or list a year before we signed him. And now,
I mean, you're right. There's some bad players on this team, and we know that for sure. I mean, I can go down to back seven and list what all their flaws are, but let's transition a little bit to City, right? I don't think we talked a lot about United the last couple of weeks, and we will continue to talk about them a lot until literally Ole gets fired. But let's talk about City for a second. The fact that Raheem Sterling didn't start, he was on the bench, right? They played, Jesus is probably the only true striker, but they played him out wide. And then you have Jack Grealish not starting. You have Fernandinho, Mahrez. Like, you know, you look at City, you're consistently amazed by like how good they can be with the variation and a fresh lineup. But then you think about the fact, okay, they lost last week to Crystal Palace. Like, what are your thoughts on City? Or is this team just that good that they really, if they can turn on, they're going to win everything? Or is it a team that is still, you know, trying to figure out their best 11? And because they have such good players, they can just kind of skate through some games easily.
Well, I was thinking about that, Shay, and actually I'm going to also ask a question, but based on that, because I was thinking like, damn, like, yeah, Raheem Sterling doesn't get a look in anymore. Mahrez also, like, these guys were such fixtures of the Man City team last season, season before. And I was wondering, like, I mean, honestly, right now, Foden, Jesus are playing lights out. So, you know, there's it's competitive for those spots. But also, I think City do a good job of, they're in many competitions. They want to win as many as possible. So, like, they rotate their squad. And I think, you know, to keep that competitive edge, like, also think about it. Bernardo last season couldn't get a look in. This season, he's also playing lights out. So I think Pep manages the players well and rotates them and keeps that competitive edge going so that if a player is playing well, he's got the spot. In terms of, do I think they could win it all? You know, I think this team is pretty unstoppable, but I've thought that every year, and yet, you know, in Premier League, they can do it. But Champions League, they always struggle a little bit after looking so amazing for so long. So I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. And my question is really like, do you think that these guys, Raheem Sterling, Ryan Mahrez, do you think we're going to see these guys come back into the squad? Or is this, like Shay saying, is this the squad for the season?
I think it's going to be a bit of a rotation with City. You know, we always talk about fantasy, and City is the worst team to have players in your fantasy squad because you never know what their lineup is going to be. Phil Foden, Gabriel Jesus, Jack Grealish, Ferran Torres, like they can interchange their front three effortlessly, and they don't even have a number nine. They're kind of in this mode where they're one of these teams where they kind of like slowly heat up and then they just go on like an insane run. And that's what I think is what's happening this year. And unlike other teams, because the fact that they can rotate their squad so well and it doesn't really hinder them, that's where they really scare me as just being a top, being the top team in the league. But they still have those blips in games. They still have those blips in games, especially in knockout competitions as we've seen. But they look really, really dangerous now. And even if Raheem Sterling or Riyad Mahrez were to leave or something were to happen, it's City. They'll find a replacement, a younger replacement, and it'll work in Pep's system.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, watch come like January, all of a sudden, you know, when all the teams are getting a little tired of their fixtures, suddenly Sterling and Mahrez are like lining up in the Premier League. Like, what?
Running at you whenever your team is tired. Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I think it's a combination of Pep is just a great manager, honestly. I mean, and the fact that you play who's in form. And when someone dips out of form, Sterling can very easily fill that void. I don't think he's going to last the City much longer, not but by choice. City is my favorite to win it all. And I still believe that is true because of their ability to score goals pretty effortlessly and consistently rather than Chelsea. But I think that team has been amazing. Okay, guys, well, before we wrap up this section and go to our next break, any other games you want to highlight quickly that surprised you or were interesting to watch from the weekend? I thought the Everton-Tottenham one was, you know, was a good result for one of the teams I have I have my money on this season. But
you know, Arsenal winning again. They haven't lost since the Man City game, and you know they're a good chance of being able to fight for a top four place. So you know that was a good win for them. One thing I want to say about City, I just want to quickly shout out Joao Cancelo. He's an absolute baller. I think he's best left back and maybe right back in the league right now. Him, Trent, and Reece James are in that three. So yeah, just shout out to him. He's an amazing out.
When we come back, we'll end with Prediction League and give you a little teaser for the international break coming up. Welcome back. We got the ATP Prediction League brought to you by Soji, SojiClothing.com. We just finished the month of October. We had Up Your Arsenal win. Up Your Arsenal, we'll be contacting you for your Soji ATP swag. But we started a new month in November. And remember, there's now monthly winners. So if you miss a week or two, it's okay because we now have monthly winners. So if you haven't been participating at all, it's okay because we now have monthly winners. And we started out the month in November. And I will tell you guys, I had to do a double take of my math. I had to, you know, loop you guys in because I was very, very surprised, and not in a good way, by some of the results we got this week. Let me start with the bottom half of this month in November, aka the first match week of November. Eric, our very own Eric, ATP, had one correct prediction. 1 out of 10. So we can no longer make fun of Chris for that abysmal week he had. Miles, you didn't do much better, but it's okay because neither did I. You, Jacob, and I had 2 out of 10 games accurately predicted. So, yeah, not great. But then Hase Ropa, you get to see you again. You had 9 out of 10. So, you know, you get all flavors within the prediction league. But please continue to fill those out and get your picks in time. I missed the email, so that's partially why, probably why a lot of people didn't submit this week per usual. And then for the Oracle pick, Peter, I believe by default, it would go to you. Would you like to give us?
Peter, congrats to you. You've really sucked through it. Like, you know, last season was rough. You're back with a vengeance this season. Become the Oracle.
Okay. Let's do it.
Or you can wait. You can defer. You can defer. So you
have I will say Arsenal will get a point at Anfield.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yo, if that happens, we got to have an Arsenal dedicated podcast. We got to.
Yeah, okay, I'm down. If Arsenal get a point away at Anfield, yes, we can dedicate that whole podcast to Arsenal's glory. I'll do it.
What did they win?
They're not going to win.
But what did they win?
If they win, I will apologize to every Arsenal fan that I've talked shit about their team for pretty much every year we've had this show. I will repent. I'll praise Arsenal for the whole episode.
Okay. Well, we heard it here. So please fill out those predictions. We will send out the emails to get your picks in, and you can win some very cool swag. Right now, the swag of the month is hats. So watch out for that. Okay. International break, guys. International break. We will have a weekend off of the Premier League. There's some tantalizing games. Which one will you be paying attention to the most? And what team are you looking to check out pre-World Cup for the qualifiers?
Well, USA-Mexico in Cincinnati on Friday is probably going to be like the biggest game on this side of the pond. It's a huge game with huge qualification implications. Christian Pulisic is back in the squad, and that'll be an interesting game. Or, you know, Chris, who I don't know when he's getting back from Morocco, but he'll probably be watching El Salvador play Jamaica, and it's pretty much make or break for Jamaica. They really can't drop any more points right now, so fingers crossed for them boys. Any other games?
You know, I live in the U.S., but my heart, you know, don't cry for me, Argentina. But Argentina plays Brazil on the 16th, and that's always a fiery matchup. Brazil's top, Argentina's second, top by a lot of points. Argentina's second, they're probably going through anyway, but it'll be a fiery matchup.
That's a good game. One thing I do like about international week is like I tend to tune out and not watch that much soccer. Like I'll tune into a USA game, or like if something is just like on the TV while I'm working, I'll do that. But sometimes, you know, living in DC, you get the same thing in New York. Like there's, you know, we just live in super diverse cities. So every country, like, you know, you go to a bar, you go somewhere, and there's people supporting their country. And like in my neighborhood, it's a huge El Salvadorian neighborhood. Like, I think it's the largest El Salvadorian population in the country. So anytime they play, like the you just see everyone's has their El Salvador flags. People are grilling like starting at like noon on a Wednesday. So it's always, you know, you always forget the reach of the sport.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a good call out. I mean, it means something to everybody from their own culture or country and culture. And World Cup qualifications is a significant thing, because if you play in the World Cup, then it's lights out. But I'm interested to see Nigeria. I haven't honestly, truthfully watched many games, but after they lost to Central African Republic, I think it's time I need to get tuned in, because this team needs all the support they can get to play Liberia, a fellow West African nation, and then Cape Verde. So, which hopefully should be a win, but who knows? So that's what I'm going to be paying attention to. I'm going to actually take intention this international break to watch a couple games.
Well, you know, Shay, that's actually very nice segue into, you know, I have a little game for you all because it's international break. You know, I also like to take a break, but I'm going to name a country for you. Will you tell me the best player from that country playing in the Premier League?
I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, I'll just give you two.
Please, go ahead.
First one is Nigeria.
Ndidi. Wilfred Ndidi. That's my opinion. What do you guys think?
Of all time?
No, current.
Current? Victor Osimhen.
He's not in the Premier League.
Oh, he has to be in the Premier League? My bad. I'm not even paying attention. Premier League. I'm sorry. Ndidi.
That was the easy one. But I wanted to hype you up in Nigeria.
Yeah, we're good. Don't worry about us. We're good.
All right, what about Jamaica? That one's for Chris. He's not here.
He would want us to say like Mason Greenwood or something, but we'll say Mikel Antonio.
Yeah, I'll say Mikel Antonio.
All right, I got one last tough one for you. What about Brazil?
I don't know. That's a tricky one.
Thiago Silva. Right now, Thiago Silva. Yeah, him or I would say him right now. I was gonna say Douglas Luiz, but Villa hasn't been playing well, but he's been playing well.
I think you go goalies. I think you go, but the question is which one. But I think Alisson.
Alisson Ederson as well. Yeah,
Miles, what about you? I know you like your South American team. So
for Brazil, I think Ederson plays in. I think Ederson is their starting goalie, but I would pick probably Fabinho, but I don't think he really plays that much in the national team. But I think Fabinho.
Fred starts over Fabinho for
the. I know this team. Wild, but I think because Casemiro plays, they don't know what they're doing down there.
That's the point I was making.
Fabinho.
Somebody
is
said
so dope. Anyways,
Miles, one more. Give us one more.
USA. Well, no, there are not that many options there. Okay, tough one. Portugal.
Oh, Bruno Fernandes.
Bernardo Silva right now. Bruno Fernandes is my boy, but he has not been playing well.
I'll tell you what, though. I think Portugal is going to be a very, very strong team in the World Cup. You know, you can say England, you can say Italy, but my money is just be Ronaldo's last World Cup. I don't know. I think Portugal is going to be Bernardo Silva, Felix, Sanchez. I think
they have a squad.
Jota. Yeah, they're going to be nice.
Diaz. They got worked so badly by Germany, though. So, I mean, there are obviously some holes. And, hey, don't forget, you know, Semedo plays there. Firpo is Brazilian.
Nah.
Portuguese, or is he Spanish?
João Cancelo. Yeah.
Cancelo. Hey.
I'm gonna rep them. I bought a jersey when I was out there, so you know they're a country of interest for me.
Miles, you missed one for Nigeria.
Shea
Davis. Shea Davis. I haven't started my Premier League career yet, but I should be.
Oh,
close.
I thought he played for Russia.
All right, Miles. What you got? You got a question, or you want to take us out?
No, I got one last one. This is a tough one, and you know I got to do it for myself here. What about England?
Well, it's not Harry Kane. It's not Jack Grealish. That's a tough one.
Ooh, Declan Rice or Phil Foden? right now. The two best English players. Trent too. Declan Rice, Phil Foden, and Trent are the three best English players.
You got to pick one though.
Then I'm going to pick Phil Foden because I just want, like, he's amazing. So, and I just recency bias. That's the one last one I just saw.
Yeah, recency bias. I like Trent here the best. It's all close. So I pick Trent.
Hey, man. Yeah, growing it out is making him play better. He knows. He knows the recipes.
And with that, you know, Shay, Chris wants us to say Trent is the best right back in the world right now. So,
okay.
Take us out.
The Chris Whisper, Miles Johnson.
Yeah. You can find us on AcrossThePond.co, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Look us up. We're great content. Shay Davies is the master mixer.
Thank you. Enjoy the international break, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you get some good R&R. We'll be back. Peace.